Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Jill Kaufman. It is Friday, and time for our Week in Review, with Washington, D.C. still buzzing over the release of the Mueller report. Here's Representative Jerry Nadler, chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, on ABC this morning.
We need the entire report, unredacted, and the underlying documents in order to make informed decisions. And after we get that, and we will subpoena that entire report today.
That subpoena has been filed by Democrats on Capitol Hill. Now, White House Deputy Press Secretary Hogan Gidley told Fox News today that Nadler and the Democrats are grasping at straws and should just give up and move on.
When does this ever stop? I mean, if we gave them the unredacted report, if we gave him all the tax returns unredacted as well, he would still want something else.
And the question is, could that something else lead to impeachment proceedings? Democrats are saying there are impeachable offenses, but what Congress needs to do now is to continue the fact-finding. House Oversight Committee Chair Elijah Cummings says people will look back on this moment as a very difficult time in our nation's history.
I'm begging the American people to pay attention to what's going on.
Joining me to talk about all of this this afternoon on Radio Boston is Richard Tessay, the former minority leader for the Massachusetts Senate, still in government affairs in the private sector. Welcome.
How you doing?
Good to see you. Also here is John Carroll, WBUR senior news analyst and blogger at It's Good to Live in a Two Daily Town. Hi.
Hi.
Again. We saw you earlier this week, and it's nice to see you again. Richard, to say your initial reaction to the report. This is a day after, of course.
I think the report is great for our country. I mean, the fact that the cloud over the president has been lifted. I guess you can break it into two parts, the collusion part and the obstruction part. So I'm just talking about the collusion part. For the last couple of years, a lot of Americans have been walking around not knowing, you know, if the Russians were collaborating with Donald Trump in some way. And I think Mueller did a very thorough job looking at every single lead, every single, you know, development that popped up. And it was pretty clear, and I know the other part of the report is questionable, but the on the collusion part, he pretty much came out in every case and said no collusion at all. And I don't understand why Americans and some of the people on the left and some of the congressmen aren't happy about that. It was like his report got them even angrier, and they're more determined to go after mm-hmm. him. And I think that the average American who's looking at this whole thing, at the end of the day, got the answer that they wanted, and they're ready to move
right.
on.
There were questions, though, in the Mueller report on whether the Russian involvement and the president's campaign.
On the collusion part, though, he was very clear. Now, we can have a discussion on the obstruction
yes, absolutely.
Part.
Absolutely. But there's a legalese, and we can get into this in just a moment. I just want to flag it all. But it's great. It's good that people maybe have some answers now to at least one part of what's going on between the White House, at least, and the Democrats. John Carroll, same question. Just initial reaction day after?
Well, this is Donald Trump Rorschach test number 3,472. Just look at the lead editorials in the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times today. The New York Times headline is Mr. Mueller's indictment. The Wall Street Journal headline is obstruction of nothing. So, you know, you can look at this, and depending on how you hold it up to the light, you know, you're going to come out of it with two different conclusions. You know, some people look at the report on collusion and come to the conclusion that basically the Trump campaign was collusion curious, but they weren't competent enough to actually collude with the Russians. That's one way of looking at it. The problem here is that the perspectives are so baked in at this point that it's really hard for someone to take a step back and say, you know, maybe I should be rethinking the way I was looking at this. And you know, Capitol Hill is not helping. The media is, in many instances, is not helping either.
It's not helping. I know. Right. And we are aware of this. And you know, we could spend the next hour talking about this back and forth between these two different opinions. But what I'd like to do is look forward with you and say, you know, here's what we know today, that the Democrats have subpoenaed in the House the full report. It's a day before, I believe, the AG William Barr is scheduled to testify before the House Judiciary Committee. And we heard the White House condemning that approach. Is the subpoena appropriate, Richard Tessay?
I think that having Mueller come, I know he was subpoenaed to come before the committee, is fine. You know, I do think that the Attorney General acted properly by not disclosing or making public grand jury testimony, because he would have been breaking the law to do it. And I understand that those members of Congress who need to see that are going to be able and given the opportunity to see it. So I think, again, it's like that they're angry that the report, you know, that the they're actually mad that it wasn't proven that the president got a clean bill of health mm-hmm. on this, and they're going to find anything they can to keep this going. And I think that the more that they do it, it's going to end up backfiring on them, and they have to be very careful right now.
Jumping ahead, backfiring into 2020, perhaps.
Exactly.
Right. John Carroll, what's your take on the subpoena of the full report? Again, William Barr is scheduled to testify before the House.
My understanding is that Bill Barr is going to give to a bipartisan group of congressmen the full report except for the grand jury proceedings, so that basically he's going to give them much of what the public hasn't seen. And the grand jury proceedings, that's a case where you could go to court and ask the court to allow you to reveal that. So that's something that may come out too. I think, you know, one of the issues here is William Barr an honest broker at this point? A lot of what he said and a lot of the way he presented the report is being called into question now. Charlie Savage at the New York Times has a good piece on the disparities between what Barr said and what the Mueller report found. Bill Barr says Donald Trump, cooperated fully. Well, no, he didn't. He wasn't willing to answer questions about obstruction. Bill Barr says the DOJ guidelines that the sitting president can't be indicted had nothing to do with Mueller's conclusion. That's not true either. So I think, you know, Bill Barr has been someone who was brought in specifically because of a couple of different views, an expansive view of executive power and a very narrow definition of what constitutes obstruction.
Let's hear about, before releasing the report yesterday, Barr defended the president, and Democrats criticized him for what, as you're talking about, described as protecting Trump's interests instead of the American people. So we spoke with David Gergen yesterday, former presidential advisor to four different presidents, different parties, and he told us that through all of this, William Barr has been acting with an agenda.
The new Attorney General, Mr. Barr, has steered the whole process in such a way as he's tried to give a whitewash to what's in the Mueller report, and he's tried to create a public narrative that there was no conspiracy and no obstruction, and that is not where the Mueller report came out.
Richard, to say, I think that a lot of people won't have time to read this report, and I think I don't think this alone. That I think many people will base what they're thinking about this report on what William Barr said yesterday on the short story,
well,
what we say.
They're going to base it on the press, and all along the press has been wrong about this. They've been making wild accusations, salacious accusations for 2 years, and everything that they've told people, every bombshell and the walls are closing in on the president, all of that stuff was false. And so I think that the press doesn't have much credibility right now. And I would just say that I do think that
The report verified much of the
I read the report last night. And again, the first section of the report on every single thing that's popped up for the last 2 years, Mueller pretty much said there's no evidence that anybody on the Trump campaign or anybody, any American, was involved in any type of collusion with the Russians. And that's the takeaway from the report that people should have.
The report also said, and I'm sorry, I don't have it in here with me because I would love to make sure I have this right, so somebody check me, that there was evidence that there were holes in evidence, that there was, this is about collusion, there were holes. And so there's things that weren't unknown, so the conclusion is the weight of evidence.
On the collusion, on the obstruction part, there's obviously a difference of opinion. But again, reading the report, he was very clear on all of these things. Jeff Sessions meeting with Russians very clearly said that didn't happen. It happened, it was just breezing by. Carter Page, who supposedly this whole thing started from, he came out and said Carter Page, right in the report, there's nothing that he did that, you know, in any way was illegal or any type of problem. So I think if you read the report, and again, this is baked in. I agree with what John said. You know, people's opinion aren't going to change. The people who hate Trump are just going to go on to the next thing. They're going to move the goalpost now, and rather than having a fight about collusion, the next couple of years are going to be whether or not the president
obstructed
justice.
I just want to throw this one line out, John. Your next this is from the report. A statement that the investigation did not establish particular facts does not mean there was no evidence of those facts. So this is a judge, in a sense, weighing what he has. John.
You can argue just the opposite of what Richard just said, that the media did its job too well. Because if you think in terms of if this came out and none of those stories had appeared, and it confirmed a lot of the reporting that we've seen, if this came out yesterday and Robert Mueller said, go arrest Paul Manafort, go arrest Rick Gates, go arrest Michael Flynn, and all this information came out at once instead of coming out in dribs and drabs, then this would have a very different impact than it does now. So I think that in a way, the media, the job the media did, and there were definitely people who overstepped, there were definitely people who were wrong. There's no question about that. But there were a whole lot of people who were right. And the fact that this is confirming that has lessened its impact instead of increased it.
Listen, you know, John Dean spoke this morning on CNN, and it's just so interesting to go back to Watergate. John Dean, as some listeners likely know, most listeners likely know, was the White House counsel during President Nixon's administration, who in the end, he went to jail for lying for Nixon, but he also went on to play a role in bringing down Nixon in the Watergate scandal. And he spoke to CNN's Jake Tapper this morning about how the Mueller report compares to ones like it in some way in the past.
I looked on my shelf for the Senate Watergate Committee report. I looked at the Iran-Contra report. I also looked at the Ken Starr report. And I've got to tell you, I've read all those. This report from the special counsel is more damning than all those reports about a president.
More damning, worse than Watergate. And coming from Dean, does that for you, Richard, to say carry some weight? Does it?
He's a liar. In general, he went to prison for lying and he was part of Nixon's cover-up and all of a sudden he's an authority. To compare Donald Trump to Richard Nixon, and I know that that's being done a lot, is absolutely ridiculous. And you got to think, and I would say what I was upset about with the report was that the report didn't really explain, well, how did this whole thing start? Nothing about the dossier in the report, nothing about Fusion GPS in the report, nothing about Glenn Simpson in the report, and the fact that Hillary Clinton's campaign had paid Glenn Simpson and he hired a foreign national, Glenn, to go out and pay Russians to get information. I mean, that obviously was Russians being involved in the election. And the whole charge of Bob Mueller from the very beginning was to investigate whether or not Russia played a role and interfered in our elections. And it seems as though that because they didn't do a thorough job, and even the Comey firing, which started this whole thing, there wasn't really a big section about that either. So the bottom line is that the report leaves a lot of questions unanswered, and I think
yes, and it was an investigation into certain things that may or may not have been needing to address some of these items.
And one question that could use an answer is why hasn't Donald Trump come out and said, look, I didn't collude, but it's an outrage that Russia interfered with our election as much as it did. And, we should do something about this and send a clear message that people who want to come in and mess with the democratic process will have to pay a price. There's no mention of that because he's afraid that if he acknowledges the Russian interference, it'll delegitimize his presidency or undermine his presidency. But any other president would come out with this evidence and say, this is outrageous. We cannot allow any country to do this to our democratic process.
Let's look forward for just a moment to 2020. We'll spend a few more minutes on this. This is a really big report. The public, myself, if I weren't in the press, how much of this would I be reading? How is the public supposed to make sense of this report as we head to 2020? Will people dig in and read it? Will they base their, as we talked about a few moments ago, their understanding of what the report is about on us and on Barr's press conference yesterday? Lots is going to happen in Washington between now and 2020. What can we think? What is the American public doing right now with this?
2020 is, in political years, is 10 years away. And I don't think that this is going to be that big of an issue. What I do think is going to be an issue is that when the other reports come out, the Inspector General's report is due out at the end of May, beginning of June, and they're going to really look at the role that the FBI and our intelligence community played. And I think that might end up lingering a little longer than this. Just people losing faith in the Department of Justice and the CIA, and you know, as opposed to, I think, you know, everything goes pretty quickly in politics, and I think that this has been decided at this point.
Okay, John Carroll.
The one thing I'd add is that, you know, Robert Mueller outsourced 14 investigations, 12 of which we don't even know who they're investigating or what they're investigating. Two of them we do know. Those are going to come out at some point, somewhere. And so that may keep it alive. I think the Democrats have a real hard challenge in front of them in terms of how to handle this. And I think that so far they're probably losing in public opinion, but we'll see how it, how it goes from there.
It is a light year away in some ways, and yet it'll be here tomorrow. John Carroll, Richard Tessier, let's switch topics for a moment. Talk about the Stop and Shop strike, which is in day nine. The United Food and Commercial Workers Union and Stop and Shop have returned to the bargaining table today to negotiate health care and pension benefits and the use of automation in the company's stores. You got 30,000 workers across New England have been picketing since last Thursday, and the strike has been brewing for weeks after negotiations failed to produce a labor contract. Let's hear some tape here for a minute. A number of politicians have showed up to support their picketers. It's really interesting. You know, all these folks are coming to New England for this. This morning, South Bend, Indiana mayor and 2020 Democratic presidential candidate Pete Buttigieg joined workers who were striking at a store in Malden.
The working class deserves to be able to live well, to contribute in their communities, to contribute to their families, to their faith, whatever it is that they believe is most important in life, and to know that they will be able to do that on the basis of coming to work and doing a good job every day. And Stop and Shop needs to see that.
That's Pete Buttigieg. I'll get his name by the time 20. Mayor Pete. I know this is why he's got that handle. Yesterday, former President Joe Biden, that one's easy, spoke at a rally at a store here in Dorchester.
What's happening here is workers are not being treated across the board with dignity. They're not being treated like they matter. Wall Street bankers and CEOs did not build America. You build America.
And Senators Ed Markey, Elizabeth Warren, another presidential candidate, spoke at Stop and Shop rallies last week. What is the significance of their support? All Democrats. What is that, Richard, to say?
When you have 20 candidates running for president, there are always a few to go to any event that that's needed. But, I obviously it's a tough situation for the employees and all the people who usually stop at Stop and Shop. But, you know, retail is really difficult right now. I looked at something today. They said 6,000 retail outlets have closed during this year alone, which is already, we're not really far into the year. It's already exceeded last year. And in the supermarket area of retail, it's even tougher. So I think, you know, it's funny. We were here a few years ago when, you know, they had the big issue. Market Basket, and a lot of people said, well, are people going to go back to Market Basket because it was closed so long? And people did go back because they were loyal, but they also went back because it was cheap. You know, you can save a lot of money going to Market Basket. In this case, you got to wonder with Stop and Shop, you know, they're in a tough spot because you do have the Market Baskets and the Walmart on one side, but on the other side, you have Whole Foods and Trader Joe's. You know, there isn't really a middle, and the people who are they're losing right now, their customers, are they going to come back,
right?
And what's the long term?
So Market Basket may have been a family dispute, as I understand it. We're talking about in Stop and Shop, a corporation, unskilled labor, you know, the backbone of Stop and Shop, as it is at other markets. You know, John Carroll, both sides are suffering from this strike, you know, company and workers. Workers are going without pay. There's meat. I imagine that got thrown out. A lot of loss. What is this teaching us about the domino effects of labor standoffs?
Well, first of all, we should note that Stop and Shop is the only supermarket chain that's unionized in the area. So they're under increasing pressure to bring their costs down and by basically cutting their expenses, their overhead in terms of their workers, you know, that's one easy way to do it. This is a really interesting face-off because there are two completely different stories coming out from the two different sides in terms of pensions, in terms of health care, in terms of salaries. And, you know, basically it's a question of who does the public believe here.
And there is some misinformation going out there. And there's a difference between part-time workers and full-time workers and when, you know, who is going to be impacted by a new contract.
Right.
Right?
And, And Stop and Shop management is clearly doing trying a divide and conquer strategy. So they're pitting the vested pension people against the non-vested pension people. They're pitting the full-time workers against the part-time workers. They're pitting the current employees against future hires. I mean, all of these things are ways to undermine different parts of the workforce. And so far, it's been remarkable that they've kept together as much as they have.
You know, depending on the outcome of this strike, is it setting precedents, Richard, to say for future labor contract negotiations at Stop and Shop and elsewhere, noting that Stop and Shop is this enormous supermarket in New England with the largest union, if that is, I think that's a correct...
The only union, as far as I know, yeah.
So what about precedent setting after this resolves, which we imagine it will at some point?
Again, it's tough. And I mean, when you're looking at this, Stop and Shop's management proposal is to pay 92% of insurance for family plans and 88% of individual plans. You know, that's better than the federal government, which is 72%. State retirees in Massachusetts, the state picks up 85%. That's still better. And it's better, I think, than most people out there as far as the percentage that they're paying. And at a time when most companies are going to 401k plans, Stop and Shop is keeping a defined benefit. And I understand what John is saying, that they are separating out current employees versus future employees. But they might have to do that for their business model. If you go into a Stop and Shop right now, you might notice that there are more and more automatic, fewer people, you know, at the checkout counter, more and more automatic. There are robots cruising down the aisles. Labor costs are pretty big, and the state just increased the minimum wage, and they just...
Just one quick note on terms of healthcare. They've also doubled the out-of-pocket limit. So it's gone from $1,000 to $2,000 for an individual and $2,500 to $5,000 for a family. So, you know, workers are saying is, you know, whatever you're giving us is not balanced out by what you're taking away from us.
And the workers are saying, looking at an enormous corporation that's bringing in a lot of money. We're going to continue watching this and to try to understand whether or not what is happening and playing out here in New England is a future for union work going forward. Thank you so much, both of you, for coming in. It's a big day after the Mueller report, and there's always this Stop and Shop story is not going away, at least that we could tell by Easter Sunday. Maybe so. Certainly not by Passover coming up.
Rabbis have said it's not kosher to shop.
That's right.
I heard
about that. So, John Carroll, thank you so much. WBUR senior news analyst and blogger at It's Good to Live in a Two Daily Town.
Richard, thank you, Joe.
To say thank you so much, former minority leader for the Massachusetts Senate. Glad to have you back
here.
Nice
to be here.
You're listening to Radio Boston. I'm Jill Kaufman.